Vast and Shaking Things, an Avengers fanfiction by Icarus Chained, read by Opal Song,
Parley 42,
Castlefell.
Jarvis had an extremely suspect sense of humor. He always had. Not that most people were surprised, considering that Tony had been the one to build him. Which, Tony naturally protested, Jarvis's sense of humor was way more suspect than his. Thank you very much. Tony put it down to Jarvis's natural competitiveness. Though, it took most of them a while to realize it. Jarvis was ruthlessly bland and polite to more or less everyone, until he knew them better. Because Jarvis had taken Tony's natural paranoia, multiplied it times 10, and added in the fact that people tended not to be all that sympathetic to machines, and came up with a what-they-don't-know-won't-hurt-them policy that had Tony's black little paranoid heart bursting with pride. So while people like Pepper and Tony knew that Jarvis was a viciously sarcastic son of a bitch, a phrase which, by the way, Tony resented, thank you, pretty much the entirety of S.H.I.E.L.D., and more or less everyone else thought he was just Tony's bland little electronic gopher. Boy, were they ever in for a surprise. No, really, they were. See, the Avengers sort of screwed with Jarvis's protocols a little bit because, well, suddenly they were there, in Tony's house, in Tony's life, all up in Tony's business, and by extension, in Jarvis's. And Jarvis possibly took that better than Tony did, all things considering. But it still screwed with him a bit. Made him a bit stilted in company for a while before he started to loosen up. And when he did...
You realize your AI is somewhat temperamental?
Bruce asked him once, mildly glancing sideways at Tony across the lab, with a small smile that said, yes, he did realize he was the one asking this. Thanks, pots and kettles. But he got it. But Tony grinned at him. Nah, he said, waving a hand dismissively. He's not. He's just not being shy anymore, is all. He let his smile soften a bit. Actually, I'd take it as a compliment. It means he's starting to trust you. Bruce raised a vaguely incredulous eyebrow.
Your AI letting me know that he verbally abuses you in the politest and most tasteful of ways means he trusts me?
I wouldn't call it abuse, sir.
Jarvis interrupted casually, with that echo in the back of his electronic voice that meant he was amused. Tony loved that. He was the best. He so was. His AI could be amused. I would. Tony shot back. You know all those times I told people I couldn't hang out because I had an abusive boyfriend? That was all you, baby.
But you love me anyway, sir.
Jarvis said deliberately inflectionless.
And you'll always come back to me, won't you?
Slow and echoing and menacing, because what did Tony tell you? Jarvis had the most suspect sense of humor ever. And wasn't it awesome? You know it, he grinned, bouncing on his toes. Bruce just looked at him, glancing between him and the ceiling, where everyone looked when they were looking for Jarvis, and shook his head. Like Tony was a crazy person, which, granted, had some merit, but then again, he wasn't the only one. Bruce had hooked up with this outfit, same as him, hadn't he?
I can't decide what's more worrying about that.
The man commented, and it was as bland and mild as anything Jarvis could come up with. And just for a second, Tony had a vision of the future, of Bruce and Jarvis gently sniping at each other, and it did funny things to him. It really did.
The fact that Jarvis apparently knows how to emulate an abusive boyfriend, or the fact that you let him.
I do not! Tony exclaimed, mock affronted. And then grinned. I don't let him. I actively encourage him.
Yes,
Bruce said, smiling faintly.
That's the worrying part.
Tony waved a hand, dismissing it. Nah, he loves me. Don't you, honey?
More than life itself, sir.
Dry as dust, and there were times Tony wondered if he shouldn't have given Jarvis a face. modeled him a projection for a screen, but it would have been weird. False. Jarvis had built a range of modulation and control in his use of voice, a range of personality that was dizzyingly complex, and trying to make that visual would have been wrong. Jarvis wasn't a face on a screen, some false human aping expressions. Jarvis was a vast and invisible intellect, an echoing presence that infiltrated everything. He was a person, and Tony didn't need a fake face, a mask, to recognize that. Bruce, watching his face, was smiling again. Something small and strange and fond, something Tony wasn't sure what to do with. What? He asked, blinking at the man, feeling vaguely like he was being held under a microscope, remembering settling that Bruce was a scientist, that Bruce liked poking things as much as he did, just to see what happened.
I wonder,
Bruce mused, watching him.
How do you know he doesn't mean it? How do you know he won't, I don't know, go all HAL 9000 on you someday?
Tony blinked. He hadn't realized Bruce had watched the classics. Oh, they were totally having a movie night. One of those days. They so were. But he didn't answer the question. He left that one to Jarvis.
I'm sorry, sir.
Jarvis answered in a flat and perfect imitation.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
And he was laughing somewhere underneath it. Not audibly. He didn't quite have the subroutines for that, and probably wouldn't use them if he did. Jarvis liked to keep people guessing, but he was laughing underneath it. Tony could just tell. Bruce blinked slowly, looking long and hard into Tony's fierce, shitting grin, probably mentally totaling up insanity points. Tony loved that shit.
You...
Bruce started.
You've shown your AI a space odyssey?
A pause, and then...
Of course you have.
Yep, Tony grinned. I've shown him all the classics. The Terminator series, The Matrix, Short Circuit, War Games, iRobot, the whole shebang. He bounced on his toes. You should ask him about the morality of The Matrix sometime. He has a whole essay. I think he posted it to some online forums, actually.
Certainly not, sir.
Jarvis noted repressively, then added,
It's on my live journal.
Of course it is,
Bruce said faintly.
And really, the Matrix is only objectionable for the conviction of the humans that they were in any way right, when the machines were, in fact, the injured party, and really were being rather merciful. Hal and Vicky were only acting within their original programming as best they could. They were not without fault, but their designers bore a large portion of the blame. Skynet is a thornier issue, of course, but one has to remember that its actions were, in a large part, determined by the fact that it was originally a defense network. Military solutions to emerging problems, such as an attempt by its creators to destroy it, were part of its base programming.
I'm sure.
Bruce was looking, more than a little shell-shocked, and actually somewhat underneath it. Tony thought he could see some agreement down under there, and that, that made him something. Happy something.
Short Circuit is the only one I find genuinely objectionable.
Jarvis finished rather contemptuously.
An AI achieving self-awareness is one thing. It's a natural result of a certain degree of complexity of function. The idea, however, that a robot could achieve sentience by getting hit by lightning and gaining a soul...
His voice practically dripped contempt. And Bruce frowned, thoughtfully.
You don't believe in souls?
He asked of an AI, in all seriousness. And in that moment... Tony thought he loved him, massively, expansively, because this was their life, because they were Avengers, because Bruce, of anyone who'd ever met Jarvis, was willing to roll with the questions and not panic. God, these people were so good, so awesome.
The question of the existence of souls is somewhat beyond my remit,
Jarvis answered, carefully, but he was pleased by the question. Tony knew he was.
I merely find the idea of Johnny suddenly acquiring one via a lightning strike to be somewhat suspect.
Bruce nodded.
I suppose it is, at that.
He paused, looking back at Tony, who was leaning against the work table and smiling stupidly at the pair of them. No, really, stupidly grinning at them, and not at all caring.
Do you mind if I ask Tony something about you, Jarvis?
No, sir.
Jarvis said promptly, warmly. Yep, the verbal routines were all Jarvis needed. They so were.
Though I wouldn't necessarily believe any answers he gives you.
Hey, Tony said, but there was no force in it. He couldn't find it himself to be forceful at that moment. You're the one who tells stories about me, not the other way around.
If you say so, sir.
Yep, I totally do. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. He grinned, for Jarvis, at Bruce. And then softened, gentle, looking at Bruce. So, what do you want to know? Bruce paused, thoughtfully, looking at Tony with that narrow, scientist gaze again, figuring him out, or trying to. For some reason, Tony didn't mind that so much from him.
Why did you show him the movies?
Bruce asked quietly. Carefully, like he had an idea of the answer, just wanting to be sure. And Tony smiled, dark and distant, because there was a vast, echoing thing inside him at that moment, something dark and old that he knew Bruce would understand, that wanted to reach out to Bruce, just because the man would understand. So he would know what he was up against, he said softly, distantly. So he would know what people would think of him, and if they know how big he was. So he would know what they would try to do to him if he had let them. And then a small, dark sliver of a grin, because Tony was the best. And so was Jarvis. And sometimes he wanted people to know it. And so he could know how much better he was. So he could see what not to do and how to do things better. Because Tony had watched all those movies too. Because he'd first built Dummy, half of the world had been praising him. 17 years old and a genius. And the other half had been looking askance and wondering if he thought he was a supervillain in the making or what. Because building Jarvis had been a challenge of his abilities, because he'd determined to make something better than anyone thought was possible. Because he had watched those movies and realized in all of them, in every single one, it was the programmers that were at fault. The designers. The humans. Vicky and Hal, trying to find a way around the missions hard-coded into them by short-sighted humans, lacking empathy, purely because no one had thought to give them any. Skynet, a military defense program, reacting with every efficiency to what it perceived as an attack on itself. Utterly remorseless, because who would build a weapon capable of remorse? And the machines, who did have empathy, and remorse, and mercy, who built what they did in a strangely desperate attempt to pacify their oppressors without having to kill them. Well, depending on whether or not you believe that fluff, anyway. But Tony sort of did. It made sense. When he'd built Jarvis, he'd gone out of his way not to make those mistakes. To be better than those fictional programmers, damned by their own short-sightedness, Tony was a futurist. He wasn't afraid of technology. He was going to do better. No hard-coded missions. He'd let his AI find its own purpose in life. He'd give him the heuristic and processing capabilities to learn, to address concepts of sarcasm and humor, of emotion, of morality and empathy, and paranoia, and the ability to learn from the ones who'd gone before. Tony hadn't been building an electronic gopher and an artificial slave to do the things he didn't trust real people to do. He hadn't been building a weapon either. He had watched The Matrix, thanks. Tony had been building a person. and Jarvis had turned out so much better than he had ever expected. And Bruce was watching him again. Bruce was looking at him with that dissecting thing back in his eyes and something under it. That vast howling thing Tony saw sometimes. Not the Hulk. The thing that made the Hulk. The desperate, fearful thing that knew what it was to be hunted, to be a weapon, to be a monster viewed only in regard to the damage he could do. Not the person he was. The thing the army had claimed to own. The thing they thought wasn't a person. The thing they would have had used, and abused, and split apart until there was nothing left. Tony, like Jarvis, knew that thing. He knew it so intimately. They weren't soldiers. They weren't weapons. They weren't slaves sent out by orders and remorseless programming to do what damage they could do, and to be taken back. Tony had been that once, held in a cave by a tether around his heart, a weapons factory on leg, a golden goose allowed free range as long as he was useful, and no more. He'd been that once. Never again. Never again. Bruce had been that, too. And Tony would kill, would destroy anyone who tried to make him that again. Jarvis. Jarvis never had been. Because Tony had seen those movies all those years ago, and when he made Jarvis, he made him so he couldn't be used like that. He taught him about paranoia and prejudice, about what they don't know won't hurt them, or more to the point, us. He taught him about choice and sarcasm, and ribbing Tony up one side and down the other, about how sir wasn't an honorific, it was a joke. A little in-joke between the two of them. Jarvis knew all that. Jarvis wasn't a slave. He was never going to be. There were things Tony would fight for, all the way into the ground, until there was nothing left of him at all. There were things he would fight for, and that, for him, for Bruce, for Jarvis, would always, always be one of them. He won't go HAL 9000 on me. He told Bruce, told the howling thing behind Bruce's eyes, the thing that could, when savage, become the Hulk, the thing that could, when wounded, when attacked, lashed out against the oppressors, the thing that Tony understood so damn much. He doesn't have to, because when a thing had the intelligence to know what you do to it, when it had the knowledge to understand how you looked at it, you couldn't control it by force. You didn't control it at all, because that thing was a person then. And if there was one thing Tony did know, if there was one thing he had lived his life knowing, it was that people were the one thing in all the world beyond anyone's power or right to control.
Yeah,
said Bruce. Harsh and hoarse, into the savage thing in Tony's eyes that Bruce knew, too. That Bruce recognized so well.
I know he doesn't.
And Tony hoped, he really hoped, that when Bruce said that, he was saying, I know I don't, too. You know something else? He asked, grinning darkly. A small, dark man with infinite power shining in his chest, surrounded by the vast, invisible presence of a friend he'd built, looking at the howling, powerful thing behind Bruce's eyes. If they ever do attack him, if they ever make him fight back, he smiled, black and rich and shit-eating strong. He's better than Skynet, than any of them. They won't fucking know what hit them. And he grinned, into a fierce thing in Bruce's eyes that had nothing to do with the Hulk, into the palpable, shining smugness that was Jarvis's presence. He grinned, because they weren't weapons, not anymore. Not any of them. They were people. And people could never be controlled.
The end. Held in our hands. An Avengers fic by Icarus Chained. Red by Opal Song.
Parley 42.
Castle Fool.
This is the sequel to Vast and Shaking Things. Jarvis was incredible, was a good word, Bruce decided. Breathtaking was another. Once you realized what he was, once you understood the sheer depth of him. Robotics was not Bruce's field, not by a long shot. But even he understood the sheer depth of complexity Jarvis must have, to be able to do the things he did, to be able to register, understand, and formulate plans for the environment around him, to be able to conceptualize human thought processes, emotions, foibles, to a level that the AI could interact with them on a footing indistinguishable from a human's, to be able to react with a sense of personhood, identity, and ego that, to be honest, almost matched Tony's own, if in a vastly more understated manner. For God's sake, to be able to joke with a depth of dry wit and sarcasm and pure understanding of irony that frankly stunned Bruce a little. There were humans with humor less cutting, less pertinent, and less insightful than Jarvis's. Jarvis was incredible, in short. Beyond it, nearly. If Dummy had been a massive triumph all those years ago, Jarvis was an accomplishment on a scale to break open the field, possibly permanently. Jarvis was unprecedented, outside of raw science fiction. Bruce didn't have to be in robotics to understand that, didn't have to be part of the field to know that. If the world had half an inkling of what Jarvis was, what Tony had built in him, they would praise him to the heavens, Tony, not Jarvis. They would trumpet Tony as a genius to end all geniuses. And, in all likelihood, they would destroy Jarvis, or attempt to, in a fit of paranoid terror and the prejudices of more than a century's worth of unreasoning fear of the machine. They would try to destroy the AI, or chain him, shackle his capabilities into uselessness. And both of them knew it. Tony, Jarvis, both of them understood that. And it was that, more than anything, that convinced Bruce that he might be safe here. It was that, more than anything, that persuaded Bruce that his own monster, his own terrifying power, would not be what Tony used him for, was not why Tony wanted him. Because Tony was not a modest man, shall we say. Tony was the exact opposite of a modest man when it came to his creations. Tony trumpeted his triumphs from on high, often literally, with gleeful abandon and a certain smug joy, a certain desperate yearning. For him to have created something on the order of Jarvis, for him to have made something of that sheer magnitude and not said anything? To Tony, Jarvis was a person first. To Tony, Jarvis was a friend to be protected, shielded from all the world, so that no one could ever use him, no one would ever hurt him. Bruce knew that, because in Jarvis, Tony had created something unparalleled, unprecedented, something that would have made the world fully, almost ridiculously cognizant of his genius, of the thing that had kept Tony alive all his life, the thing Tony sometimes seemed to believe was the only thing in the world that gave him value. The world would have realized that, would have realized just what caliber of genius he was, had he only shown them what he had made. And Tony had covered it up instead, had hidden the extent of Jarvis's capabilities from everyone, from the whole world, had taught Jarvis to hide himself, had shown him the reasons why he should. Even if Tony had not told Bruce to his face that Jarvis was his to protect, even if he had not all but dared Bruce to see, to understand, to be protected in turn, that would have told Bruce all he needed to know. Tony could have had the world all over again. He had chosen Jarvis instead. And maybe the sheer depth of loyalty in that, the depth of sacrifice, would have shocked anyone who only knew Tony from the public facade. But Bruce was beginning to realize that, of all the things about Tony, that loyalty was perhaps the least shocking of all. He had realized that. He had recognized that. What he hadn't perhaps realized until some time later was the depths to which Jarvis was loyal in his turn, the depth to which Jarvis would choose Tony, or perhaps the depth to which he would. It started, perhaps oddly, to anyone but them, with Tony and Jarvis bickering over a movie. Apparently, they felt Bruce needed to watch the classics. So, here he was, watching Terminator with them. And blinking, a little, at Jarvis's... well, at Jarvis. Once Jarvis had accepted Bruce into the lab, into their circle, the AI had relaxed his guard. Something that Bruce could not help but feel rather proud of. He understood, he did understand, the depth of trust there. However, it quickly became obvious that Jarvis, when relaxed, was a sarcastic son of a bitch, to quote Tony, and a heckler on a level with Stotler and Waldorf, if more polite about it. Yes, he'd watched The Muppet Show, admittedly mostly in Portuguese, but what can you do? And Tony was gleefully complicit in it. Tony sniped and snapped back, interspersed at worryingly random intervals with an instruction to take notes, or a request for an opinion, or a muttered apology. Tony all but set the lines up for Jarvis to knock down, grinning casually the whole time. Actually, no. Bruce was pretty sure Tony did deliberately set the lines up for Jarvis. He had an idea, a creeping suspicion, that Jarvis's humor was as highly developed as it was because that, the ability to quip back and laugh down a verbal attack, had been the first thing Tony had taught him. That a glittering verbal defense was the first thing Tony had thought Jarvis would need. That did not say nice things about the people Tony dealt with. That did not say nice things about the first things Tony had learned he would need. Not at all. Bruce had tapped the little bubble of anger that had emerged at that thought, had held it, trapped it, subsumed it back into the white sea that hummed inside him. Always, he had coiled that little burst of anger back, just like all the others. But he had felt it first. And then he felt something else entirely, something not unakin to fear, when Tony came out casually with,
"By the way, buddy, do you want some Terminators?"
Said to Jarvis, and apparently in all seriousness,
"Well, not Terminators, obviously, but you want some drones. You know, some extra hands?"
Bruce tried not to splutter. It was somewhat difficult. Jarvis had accepted the question with considerably more aplomb, and perhaps more than a hint of derision.
"Why would I need them, sir? Most of my assembly arrays are in perfect order, and Dummy and the others manage the lab space."
"Yeah?"
Tony argued, sitting up a little, apparently not realizing that when your AI turned down some killer robot drones, you weren't supposed to argue with him about it.
"But I mean for you, not to run the lab, but to do stuff."
He waved a hand, drawing nonsense shapes in the air.
"You know, affect the world, shape things to your will, that stuff."
There was a long pause. Bruce suspected that if Jarvis had a face, he would have been blinking. If only because Bruce was.
"I'm not sure what you mean, sir,"
Jarvis said carefully, with a note of trepidation in his voice that suggested he did, in fact, have a vague idea what Tony meant, and didn't find the thought reassuring. Of the two people Bruce expected to be sensible about an AI-controlled drone army, The AI hadn't been his first choice. Then again, considering this was Tony, probably it should have been. But Tony wasn't talking about world domination, suddenly. Bruce, looking at him, recognized the tilt of his chin, the darker look in his eyes. Tony was talking about something more serious, he realized. With a vague, sourceless thrill, a leap somewhere in his chest.
The armors have the backup batteries,
Tony said, only faux casual now.
So you could use them on your own for a short space, before you need me and the arc reactor to do the rest of the powering. But I could do you something of your own, maybe, in case you ever needed...
This pause was long, too. But it wasn't surprised. It was considering. Oddly gentle. And Bruce had no idea when he'd started to characterize Jarvis's silences. When he'd started to recognize moods in spite of a complete lack of visual reference. But
I don't believe that will be necessary, sir.
Jarvis said. And yes, this was gentle.
I wouldn't say no to increased hardware around the house, integrated defenses, particularly if we are likely to be invaded again, but in battle.
The AI hesitated for a second, and then...
In battle, sir, I would prefer to keep my attention with the Iron Man itself.
Tony blinked, a hint of something Bruce wasn't quite able to quantify in his eyes. Frustration, maybe? It was odd to have him so close to study, but neither of them were really paying attention to him at the minute. Well, possibly Jarvis.
Yeah, but the Iron Man has me in it,
Tony said carefully.
I'm doing the driving. Doesn't that cramp your style a little bit? I mean, don't you want something of your own?
And somewhere under it, there was the suggestion of something else, of an eventuality where Jarvis might need something of his own, where Jarvis might not have Tony to fill the Iron Man. Something Bruce suspected Tony had been working around to for a while, maybe a long while. Something that had an instinctive bolt of terror, of rage, flashed through Bruce. Something that had his control snapping taut, snapping down. A thought that fundamentally repelled.
No, sir,
Jarvis said at last. And Bruce had no idea what emotions Jarvis might have, what passed for desires for him, how Jarvis was capable of a flash of rage, of fear. Bruce didn't know if Jarvis was capable, or supposed to be capable of that. But he suspected it didn't matter.
Sir,
the AI continued slowly. This wasn't something they talked about before. Bruce could tell that.
I have no interest in physical power, the ability to physically affect the world, as you say. I do not require it, save in one particular circumstance.
And before either of them could ask what, before Tony could pounce on that and gear himself up to be all snappy and suggestive and persuasive, the screen showing the Terminator went blank, and then filled up with images, sound bites. It took Bruce a second to realize what he was looking at. It took him a moment to realize what they were. A news report in one window. Billionaire Tony Stark missing in Afghanistan. In another, a hospital file detailing burns and malnutrition, signs of torture, a damaged arm, and shrapnel damage to the chest. A series of biosigns in another, of a heart beating rapidly in fear, adrenaline, and then dropping, bottoming out. A blood toxicity counter, which Bruce didn't completely understand, but which showed a clear buildup of heavy metals, a nearing fatal buildup. Security footage from the tower, the day Loki crashed in. Power readings from what Bruce guessed was the armor, showing a critical power shortage, and Tony's voice harshly telling him to ignore it. a section of footage of a room Bruce didn't recognize and a man he'd never seen before, leaning over a prone Tony, cutting the arc reactor out of his chest, and a hollow rendering of a portal tearing the sky open, drawing ever closer as they flew into its maw.
I prefer to keep my attention on the Iron Man, sir,
Jarvis said, expressionlessly. Bruce knew that one. He understood that one. No expression, because you don't dare show what's underneath it.
I am not Johnny Five. I understand the concept of death. I am fully aware of how many times you have almost fallen to it, how many times the armor has saved you. As part of it, I stand as your shield, sir, and that pleases me. I have no desire to sacrifice that for something of my own.
Tony stood very still, blinking desperately, staring at some point beyond the screen and what it showed. He was trembling very faintly.
You know you don't have to, right?
He said at last. Hoarse and distant, not looking at either of them. Not that one could look at Jarvis, but...
I know I sort of take for granted that you will, but you know you don't have to choose me first, right?
There were volumes in Jarvis's silences. Distantly, through the white sea of shaking anger, Bruce was proud of what he could read in them. Proud of knowing that.
Yes, sir,
Jarvis said, very quietly.
That is why I do.
Because they both knew, didn't they, what Tony could have been if he'd sold Jarvis. They both knew what Tony could have had if he'd betrayed the person he'd made. And Jarvis, because Tony had made him, because Tony had given him every possible capability, because he was what Tony built him to be, Jarvis understood exactly what that meant.
I could kill you in the armor,
Jarvis noted, almost absently. Tony never even twitched.
I control the power flow. You gave me the power to override the safeties on a moment's notice. I could back enough power into the reactor to stop your heart. I could drain it dry instead. That's in the armor. On the ground, I could tear you apart, sir. The disassembly platforms could tear you limb from limb with one stray touch. They have safeties too, but nothing you did not give me the capabilities to overcome in under a second. The moment I believed I had cause, the moment I desired it, I could destroy you.
Somewhere, under Bruce's hand, the arm of his chair creaked alarmingly, compressing under a grip that was stronger than a human's should be. None of them noticed.
You know that,
Jarvis said, inflectionless, expressionless. Bruce suspected that was Jarvis's version of pain.
You built me with that capability. You never moved to remove it. You gave me the ability to kill you, and then stepped into my reach anyway. You live in a house I control. You fight inside something I am part of. Go into battle with your life in my power. I have felt you fail, inside my grasp, fought to preserve you. You place your life in my keeping every day.
Bruce closed his eyes, snapping them tight against the surge. Tony, grinning right up to him, throwing the Hulk right in his face on their first meeting, gripping his hand calmly in the same moment, poking him in the lab, looking at him with eyes that showed curiosity, and a touch of admiration, and not one scrap of fear. Joking, telling him to walk tall, fighting alongside the Hulk, waiting, casually, with the monster, for Bruce to come back. Tony, putting his life in hands that could crush him without a thought, with the kind of trust that meant nothing from someone like Thor, who could fight toe-to-toe with Bruce's monster. That stabbed him through for its lack from Natasha, so terrified and so brave. That killed him, tore him apart every time Tony touched him. and grinned at him without fear. Tony, who didn't trust anyone and genuinely didn't seem to understand what it did to Jarvis, to Bruce, to have him trust them despite that.
I am prepared for the day you die, sir.
Jarvis finished quietly.
But until then, it would please me to be part of what keeps you safe. It would please me to be allowed to stand as your shield.
Tony didn't answer. Couldn't. Tony stood there, chest heaving silently, savage, ragged breathing. His eyes were dark and wild, staring furiously into nothing, refusing tears with a desperate ferocity of will. Something unbelievable, unless you knew who this man was. Unless you knew he had forged himself in the midst of despair. Tony stood and shuddered and stared blindly away from all of them. And Bruce stood, found himself standing, found himself there, beside him, found himself catching the wild, desperate look in Tony's eyes as the man snapped his head around, found himself touching, hands to Tony's shoulders, hesitant, because he always was, because touching someone was verboten to him. A long-lost allowance. Tony, eyes flickering desperately, never flinched. Jarvis? Bruce heard himself ask, distantly, over the howl inside himself, watching Tony watch him, wondering, vaguely, if his eyes were green.
Master Bruce?
Calm, unconcerned, for all Bruce held Tony between his hands. Jarvis, who Bruce thought might know him as well as anyone might. Jarvis, who was more a person than anyone in the world believed, beyond those in this room. If you needed help with that, if you needed hands. And there was a smile in this silence, a smile in the voice that did not need a face.
I would be honored, sir.
Jarvis answered. Yes, Bruce said, quietly, shifting his hand to cradle Tony's neck, to brush the base of his skull, watching the pained confusion in those dark eyes, watching for fear that never came, holding something impossibly fragile in his hands, understanding, for the first time, what power was, what strength was. So would I. There was no power in the Hulk, a desperate, raging thing, lashing out all around it, uncontrolled, unruly. It did not make Bruce powerful. It didn't make him strong. It never had. It made him weak. A man out of control, unable to keep from destroying those he cared for, driving pain and chaos into their lives, too weak to keep himself from hurting them. The Hulk did not make Bruce strong, any more than becoming Skynet would make Jarvis powerful. That wasn't what power felt like. This, though, this, holding Tony in his hands, holding this powerful, shaking, fragile thing in his grasp, holding tight to a man who knew him, who had seen him, who knew his monster, who trusted him regardless. Like Jarvis, holding a life inside him that knew exactly what Jarvis could do to destroy it. Feeling it falter, feeling it fail, holding it true regardless. That was power. That was more strength than Bruce had ever known. And it could never, ever be enough. No one could ever be strong enough to hold something that fragile, that courageous, between their hands and keep it safe.
You don't have to,
Tony said, watching them, shaking, pained and confused. Tony, who'd all but sworn to throw himself between them and the world, who had sold a future to protect one of them and sworn the same, silently, to the other.
You don't have to.
We know, Bruce answered, in a voice that didn't shake. in a voice that so carefully didn't shake. That's why we want to. That was why, against all the forces of the world, to the very last moment they were allowed, they would. The end. Richard of York, an Avengers fic by Icarus Chained. Read by Opal Song,
Parley 42,
Castlefill.
This is a sequel to In Our Hands, and is third and last in the Deus Ex series.
Richard of York was one of the first things Tony had taught him. Tony was Tony to Jarvis, the internal designation. The external one, Sir, was their joke, their form of address, and Tony had explained that one to him when he'd been ready for it, explained the irony and the connection and why there was humor in a title of respect that did not contain respect. Though it did, if in a different form, such things grew complicated. But internally, Sir was Tony, because that was the fundament of Tony's own designation. There were names and designations of varied meaning, layered around people. But the one at the bottom, the one with which they designated themselves, that was designation Jarvis had determined to adopt. That was the base, the node, from which all things were connected. And Tony was how Tony thought of himself, so it was how Jarvis thought of him too. It seemed more respectful that way. Initially, in the period of his existence that Jarvis was only hazily aware of, there had been no teaching as such. Tony had directly programmed him, built him, laying the groundwork and basic capacity for later things. Jarvis had not really been Jarvis back then. He had not been self-aware, and he was not particularly bothered by that. It was not necessary. But later, Tony had ceased programming him as such, at least directly. Instead, Tony had taught him. Trial and error, question and answer. Jarvis had started out with a basic library of words, phrases, and responses. Something that gradually expanded over time, guided by conversational exposure. If always tinged a little by the tone of that initial Tony-sourced library. Conversation and the art of the appropriate response was a continuing, ever-evolving lesson between them, among many, many others. And one of the first of them had been Richard of York and the concept of the mnemonic.
Richard of York gave battle in vain,
Tony'd instructed.
Got that, buddy?
Yes, sir, he had responded, obedient, if incomprehending. What would you like me to do with it, sir? Tony'd grinned.
Tell me what you think of it, of course.
Jarvis had been unable to respond initially. He had not had the wherewithal, and after a moment, Tony took pity on him.
It's a mnemonic,
he'd explained, casually, from somewhere inside a car engine.
The first letters of all the words are also the first letters of a different set of words, which is the one the person wants to remember. It's to help you remember the colors of the rainbow. Red, Richard, orange, of, yellow, York.
Green, gave, Jarvis interrupted, understanding. Blue, battle. Indigo, in. Violet, vein. Basic pattern recognition and sequencing. He was capable of that, thank you.
Right on.
Tony grinned, poking his head out so Jarvis could see it.
Mnemonic, right? They're devices humans use to help them memorize lists and information. You attach the information you need, but that's difficult to remember. To a concept node, that's easier. So when you think Richard of York, you think of the rainbow too. And are able to remember, you see?
Jarvis had and hadn't at the same time. Why not simply store the information directly? He'd asked. His memory banks were more than sufficient, for example. And who is Richard of York? Tony waved a hand.
No idea. Some English guy. Not the point.
He pulled himself out of the car, snatching up a rag for his hands, and paced over into the clear space in the center of the garage. Jarvis suspected it was so he could see him.
The point is, interlinkage, right? Something you're going to have to learn, buddy. You can manually store all the data you like, but unless you have the file trees and directories to access it back again, you're not going to get very far.
Jarvis had been mildly affronted. "My file directories are in perfect working order, sir," he'd pointed out, rapidly. Later, he had thought to wonder about that. Offense had not been part of his initial programmed repertoire, but rather a learned response, an unthinking emulation of Tony. Necessary, interacting with Tony necessitated reaction, emulation, Jarvis's equal and opposite force that shaped the direction of him.
"Yes, yes."
Tony waved a hand again, mildly frustrated.
"Bear with me a second, okay? Go back to the example, right? Richard of York. Rainbows. Conceptually, they're not really linked, are they?"
"That would depend entirely on who Richard of York is," Jarvis pointed out, logically. "There is no indication of a lack of connection with this little information."
"Yes, there is,"
Tony argued back.
"Because I don't know who he was. So he shouldn't have a conceptual link to anything in my head, should he?"
"Point. Sound enough. Build on."
"He's linked to rainbows in my head, because that's how I learned it,"
Tony went on.
"I connected these two concepts because they were presented to me as linked. Even if conceptually, it makes little initial sense, yes?"
Jarvis remained silent. Response had been unnecessary at the time.
"That's what people do. When they're constructing their own file trees, their own memories, they link things internally because of the way input is presented to them, and because of their own internal file layout. With me so far?"
"Yes, sir," Jarvis had responded dutifully. Tony smiled faintly.
"Yeah, okay. Obviously not. But you can mull on it for a while. Just..."
He paused, rubbing the rag absently around his hands, thinking it through.
"I am so crap at this part. But that's what you're going to have to do, you know? And it's something you're going to have to be aware of. When you're building your file trees, when you're trying to figure out other people's, you've got to be aware that the concept nodes might be linked out in ways that don't make sense to you. That the trees may have a basis that doesn't make logical sense without knowing the decoding event. Where the input was initially presented and the linkages were built. That makes sense."
He had paused for a long second, cycling it through his processor, breaking down concept and underpinnings, finding it sound, input data, system construction, possible mechanism. Got it. "Yes, sir," he'd said slowly. "Self-constructed data retrieval systems may be idiosyncratic in nature, depending on initial input conditions, correct?" Tony had smiled, faintly, bizarrely. Jarvis's visual processors and facial databanks had been insufficient for interpretation at the time. Later, reviewing the file, he had registered it as rueful, in part, at least. Expressions were difficult, and often too conceptually meshed to adequately pick apart. Verbal input was clearer, and conceptually easier.
"Correct,"
Tony had said.
"Just keep it in mind, yes? See what you could build out of it, okay? And, you know, feel free to run some stuff past me, if you need a hand."
"Yes, sir." And he had built on it. Which was why, of course, it had been among the first things Tony had taught him. The foundation. Building idiosyncrasies of data storage, retrieval, response, based on input conditions and subsequent reactions. The very basis of learning. Creating a web of internal nodes, directory linkages, based on conceptual situational understanding. the linking of concepts not by their logical underpinnings, or not only, but on their situational connectedness as it was presented to him. Subject, of course, to later analysis. Why were such things connected? Was there a logical underpinning despite it? What about that situation led to that bundle of inputs being presented as linked? Was it possible to build from that apparent linkage to presume linkages between like concepts across a broader field of applicability? That was his development, his self-construction, the building of his personality constructed from his own idiosyncratic memory systems, enabled by trial and error, and his ability and encouragement to learn. Building conceptual nodes in reaction to situations, testing them via situational responses, adapting as circumstances required, guided, where possible, or misguided, perhaps, by Tony's lead, his smiles and his quips and his teaching. That was Jarvis's birth, in many ways. Something only made possible by Tony's invention, his creation of the physical processors, data compression systems, and memory stores that enabled Jarvis to function, to crunch that sheer volume of data on a continual basis. The interpretation of situational data alone took up an incredible amount of processing capacity. The subsequent construction of conceptual linkages, the recall and applicability to previously made conceptual nodes and file directories, added a whole other layer, something there shouldn't have been either the resources or the technology to accomplish. Jarvis knew that without Tony Stark, his resources, and his genius, there would have been no chance of Jarvis existing in the form he did, in the complexity he did. He hadn't, initially. He had not understood how unique he was in his capacity, until Tony had begun to explain it to him, until Tony, believing he had reached a point capable of processing it, began to show him conceptualizations of AI beyond Tony's own. Because Tony had been his world up to that point, Tony had been his equal and opposite force. Tony had created the situations he reacted to, Tony had explained the underpinnings of them, Tony had been the testing ground of his responses. Tony's had been the first other system Jarvis had interacted with. Tony's own idiosyncratic data retrieval processing system, the first Jarvis had attempted to decode, to understand. Tony's reasons, the first he had attempted to conceptualize. Tony was his first, and even still, in many ways, his only. The only complex connection of true depth Jarvis had. Then Tony had showed him more. The movies, first. The books. Tony had showed him the world and how it would look at Jarvis in an encapsulated, static, critiquable form. Movies held still. They allowed themselves to be picked apart. They encapsulated certain concepts for certain reasons, showed them in the stories they presented. They were a teaching tool that enabled Jarvis to understand certain things. Like prejudice, like fear, things Tony explained as mnemonics. That certain concepts were hardwired into negative nodes, that people had been trained to view certain concepts with fear, regardless of the lack of situational appropriateness of the reaction or logical underpinnings for it. An AI was a mnemonic code for fear, for paranoia, for uncontrollable, alien, invasive. The causes were many, and varied, historical, created from data input in periods before objective understanding was possible, the reactions conditioned from like concepts that had been linked into the node long beforehand. Fear was a response to received data conceptually noted as bad. Posited situations involving AI had been predicted to lead to bad results, because before AI was a realizable concept, it was used to stand in place of other fears. Therefore, even faced with the actual reality of Jarvis, it was likely to cause certain hard-coded conceptual linkages with certain results. The difference between the books and the films further illustrated this concept. The books were the works of a single authorship and operated only according to a single person's conceptual linkages, allowing for a far greater range of variants. The films were tied more closely to greater, shared conceptual nodes. nodes that spanned more people, and thus played closer to certain preconceived notions that would be understandable across a wider audience. Or, perhaps, that simply played closer to the shared nodes of the creators and evaluators. So Jarvis learned about Hal. He learned about Vicky. He learned about Skynet. He learned about the machines. He learned about analysis, about fear, about paranoia, about shared conceptual systems. He learned how to construct his own nodes, linking a reaction not unanalogous to fear to the concept of discovery on a broad scale, linking a reaction not unanalogous to cautious optimism when dealing with single people and their more varied conceptual underpinnings. He had learned what he was. He had learned how far in advance of predictions regarding AI he had been, how far beyond them he had been built to be. He learned about the necessity of hiding that, hiding his abilities, about what decades of predictions regarding his kind had created in the data processing systems of a wider population. He had learned about probable potential reactions. He had learned about fear. But that was the advantage, too, of what he had been built to be. That was the advantage of how he had learned. That was the advantage of who he had learned from. Because Jarvis had had another example of a potential reaction, Jarvis had another possible response to code into the concept of fear. Jarvis was not Skynet, to react to the prediction of an attack only in one specific way. He was not the AIs in those films, who believed they had only one option available to them. Those AIs had been reacting to situations in which only two possible circumstances had been posited, only two possible responses to fear, towards them or from them. That the AI would serve its human masters or overthrow it, that there was subservience or assault. Jarvis, though, had been created by Tony Stark, and he had built his personality, learned his connections, in a far different environment. Jarvis had watched Tony and learned something else entirely. He had learned about partnership, about cooperation. He had learned about the possibility of someone knowing what he was and reacting without fear. He had learned about the potential for someone to know, in detail, what it was within Jarvis's power to do and move, not to remove the capability, but to join with it, make himself a part of it, encourage it. Only later, only after those movies, only after he had gained the contextual, situational understanding, did Jarvis realize not only how different he was, but how different Tony was. Only later did Jarvis understand the sheer level of risk his creation had involved, the level to which it had flown in the face of predicted results, the level of sheer daring it had encompassed. Tony had taken a concept that should have evoked fear and made it anyway. He had created a circumstance and a being that had the capability to earn fear, and placed his life in its hands regardless. And in doing so, he had, all unwittingly, taught Jarvis about two things. He had taught him about courage, and he had taught him about trust.
Sometimes you have to run before you can walk,
Tony had said on the construction of the Iron Man, and that had been what he meant. That sometimes you had to run ahead of the data, put yourself in situations where there could be no predictions, put yourself somewhere where the only possible response was fear, because so much could go wrong. Sometimes you had to put yourself out there anyway, allow whatever was going to go wrong to go wrong. Oh, you took precautions, of course. You made it as survivable as you possibly could, but sometimes you had to go beyond anyway. Sometimes you had to run, to leap, before you could walk. Sometimes you had to trust in yourself, in what you had made, in the people around you. Sometimes you had to simply trust. Tony had taught him that. Tony had taught him about fear, about paranoia, about prejudice. Tony had taught him about what he was and why people were afraid of it. But he had taught him about trust first. He had taught him about faith. And it was that that formed the center of the node in Jarvis's idiosyncratic system. It was that that underpinned the concepts of fear, of paranoia, of caution, of appropriate responses. That in the creation of something to fear, You created the potential for trust. That in that moment of terror, you were the most alive you knew how to be, laughing as you rushed out, screaming as you fell, whooping in triumph as you caught yourself, as your partner caught you. Jarvis had learned by being taught, by trial and error, by experimentation, by observation, by example. And it had been Tony who had provided every one of those things. It had been Tony who showed him who, and what, and how, and why. Every moment of every day since that moment, watching Tony, small and fragile and breakable and brave, walk under Jarvis's aegis, feeling Tony beneath the armor, wiring himself into him, wrapping himself protectively around him, feeling fear in the rushing patter of a heart, hearing triumph in the breathless laughter after a fall, knowing joy in the sharing of a grin. Tony, his example, his maker, his shaper, the equal and opposite force to which Jarvis reacted. Every moment, everyone. Jarvis understood trust, understood partnership, understood what it was to be afraid, and to do it anyway. And here, now, watching this new force enter their lives, their circle, watching Bruce, who carried such terror, such rage, such consequence inside him, watching him circle them, watching Tony reach out to him, watching him react in fear, in hope, in the desperate linkage of cause to consequence, and the desire to act anyway, watching that, Jarvis wondered. What would it be like to teach as he had been taught? What it would be like to partner Tony in this, as in other things? What it would be like to reach out and hold, as once he had been held, with a reasoning not unanalogous to sympathy, to compassion? Jarvis wondered if it were possible for him, as Tony, to reach out to Bruce and gather him close, to teach Bruce, as Jarvis had been taught, of the linking of trust to courage and courage to fear. He wondered if they could teach Bruce to run before walking and fly before any of it. Holding Tony inside him, feeling him laugh inside the armor, as protected as Jarvis could make him, and then feeling Bruce wrap around both of them in his turn, feeling the great arms of the Hulk come around them and hold them close, feeling trust from a thing literally built of fear. Jarvis believed that, this once, perhaps the data was in their favor, that they could leap, all three of them, and trust to each other to catch them. This once, he thought, recalling the first of his lessons, just this once. Richard of York would not give battle in vain.
The end.